Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
Folks, welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. We have episode number 210 today. We're going to be discussing a recent blog and episode our guest did, which I did the blog, he did the episode on. We're going to call this Belief versus Knowledge or Gnosis with our guest Martin Ferretti. We've had a couple episodes with Martin in the past, including our only secret episode that we've done. We should probably try and do another one. That was fun. Go back and listen to our other ones we've done with him, and it's always a good conversation. Before we get started here, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. We've got a couple on there with Martin, so go check those out. There's a lot of good stuff on there. We're going to start probably doing a lot more now that we're getting a lot of these guests back on and stuff. But again, if you listen to our show, it's definitely worth the $2 to get all that extra content. And head on over to indrasweb.org. It is live. Sign up for an account if you want to hypothesize, theorize, speculate, whatever, on all the topics we talk about on the show. It's the perfect place to do it. We're still working on trying to get it in the App Store, but hopefully we will get that done soon. So go check that out. Without further ado, welcome back on the show, Martin. How are you?
Dude, it's great to be back. I haven't talked to you guys in 7 or 8 months. On the show, at least, officially.
Right.
It's been a while.
Yeah, you've taken a couple breaks from social media, which I don't blame you. There's a lot of BS out there, and sometimes it's just nice to just get away and do your own thing and not really worry about any of that stuff. And it can be kind of addicting, right, to some extent, so...
Hey, you got to take your breaks. Yes. Everything in moderation.
It goes pretty hand in hand with tonight's topic, I would say, too.
So this is actually why we were doing this episode, is I wrote a blog, which became a synchronicity for you, but it's because you were already kind of doing something with it. But I wrote a blog called Belief versus Knowledge, in parentheses, Gnosis. And I wrote that as a rant on Twitter. It was like an 8 or 9 tweet rant that I'm like, why am I tweeting this? Why don't I just write a blog and then share it on there? Mm-hmm. So I deleted it and then wrote the blog up and then posted it. And I wrote it because I saw a lot of crazy talk on Twitter, just about like ancient civilization stuff and the UFO stuff. And again, we love, those are our favorite things. And we love some of the more mystical alternative aspects of them, but I think that there's like a healthy way to approach that involves actually doing research and reading and understanding things and understanding what we know already and what could be possible versus absolute nonsense that some crazy person came up with, right? So I think that this is where I came up with this blog idea. And I don't know what you were thinking about at the time when you did your whole episode, but I mean, where do you stand on the whole
thing? I mean, you know, So I've done, I think, 2 episodes on belief, faith, and gnosis. And I did those as part of a long series I did on Gnosticism, where I went over the texts. And, you know, I'm starting to get back into a certain rhythm with the show. And I'm going to be diving into Christian mysticism and doing a lot of New Testament stuff, for example. And as part of that, I wanted to establish kind of... an entryway into a Christian mystic that kind of explains things in a way that aren't necessarily Christian per se. So I'm doing a series on Thomas Aquinas and the 5 proofs of the existence of God. And it was kind of funny when you tweeted what you tweeted. Cause you know, I don't do show notes. I don't believe in show notes. I just kind of let things flow. And, you know, I might think about it beforehand, but most of what I say on my show just is kind of a spur of the moment thing. And so as I was gathering my thoughts a little bit, I saw your tweet and I was like, man, now I can't put this episode out because I feel like some of the points that Maurice is making kind of have to be preempted if you want to talk about something as big as proving the existence of God, right? So before I began the episode, I gathered some thoughts on some of the things that I've done before, people, I took a months long hiatus from the podcast. And so when I came back, people wanted some discussion on how my experiences this year have changed my ideas on some of the topics that I've discussed previously in the show. And that involved heavily the idea of belief and knowledge of gnosis. Because I felt like in some regards to my life, I have gotten to a place where I don't need to believe anything to be true, where it just, it seems natural that that has to be the case. So when you posted that, I said, man, I've got to do like a short, you know, whatever, 10, 15 minute thing. It ended up being about 20, to kind of intro what's coming up next. And, you know, I'm glad you reached out so we can chat about it here. But I'm going to be going kind of really, really in depth on that in terms of a Christian perspective on the two ideas in the coming episodes.
Yeah, and I listened to your episode. I thought you did a great job, and some of those things were similar thoughts that I was having too. And we differ on certain points or whatever, but one of the interesting things is, I mean, I go into this whole rant about, like I said, mine was more provoked by people fighting about ideas that they didn't come up with, and I don't even think that they've researched the origins or the roots of those ideas and where they come from, how credible are the people, things like that. So it was coming from more of a place of like, come on, let's get it together here. And I think yours is coming from more of like a hopeful, you know, I don't even know how to explain what I'm trying to say, but just a more like hopeful spiritual place. And I think that my whole thing lately is I've been like just critiquing things, and not necessarily critiquing things to be like negative and like put things down or whatever. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to say, this is my journey, and these are things I've really researched and looked into and looked at all the different sources and cross-reference, looked at the, you know, the origins, how did they come about, how, you know, who are the people that came up with this, how did they come up, you know, like the whole background behind these things. And I think that when you look at that, it becomes kind of second nature when you're doing research, and you gravitate towards that style, and then it becomes kind of like a system. And I just think that lately I've been on this kick where it's like, I want to believe, there's that word believe, but I'm not going to just believe to believe. I want to believe in something that I think is possible based on what we already know, right? Like that's the goal. It's not to believe in something like ancient that we know can be debunked because this was found and that was found and it correlates these two things together. I think that there's, again, there's a lot of people that just don't have time to research these things. They don't have time to read everything or listen to the podcasts or listen to the author or whatever the case may be. So they'll read like an excerpt or hear a clip of something and they just run with it, right? They speculate and that becomes the mythology. So I guess that's kind of where I was coming from with my whole blog idea was that. And then I kind of gave breadcrumbs to how do we get out of this, you know?
Which I totally get. And I think, you know, part of the difference in the way that you're coming about, even though we're coming around to kind of the same points, same ideas, I think one of the differences is I try to work my worldview from the inside out, whereas most people try to work it from the outside in. So a lot of people say they believe a certain thing and they base everything else around that idea that they believe in. Okay. And I think that's probably not the best way to go about it, not the most informed way of going about it. It is the easiest way to go about it. Okay. I don't know how much you want to go into philosophy and logic on this, but, you know, it's nearly impossible to prove any particular thing to be true, right? Because in order to prove one thing, you have to prove the thing that came before and the thing that came before it, right? This idea of a progenitor. So just like you wouldn't come into existence without your parents being born and their parents being born and so on, certain ideas can't come about without another idea that forms the basis of it. And so
can I just stop you there? I don't want to cut you off, but I just want to point out one thing. That is what you're saying is 100% accurate. I just want to throw in a little something there. That was another part of like an epiphany I had, which is there's a lot of people that are like looking back at like ancient things and interpreting them their own way when that reality had already happened in the way that those people of the time's consciousness made that happen. So I think belief's important, but for future undiscovered, unknown things that are yet to be discovered, I think that's where that comes in handy. Not looking at the past and coming up with your own storyline. I guess that's, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but.
No. And I think that's a valid point. The difference for me is belief is just a starting point, right? So if you continue living your life simply according to belief, you're never going to get anywhere. Hmm. Because you're never going to know anything to be true. Okay. One of the earliest episodes that I ever did, and maybe I should revisit it, 2 years later, is this idea of authority, which plays, it's kind of a central concept in Advaita Vedanta, which I've loved for many, many years, this non-dual philosophy, and how much of your own power and your own will and your own thought is not your own, but rather just pieces of a puzzle that are assembled over a lifetime, right? And so it's very difficult to break out of those things. I titled my episode, God, what was it? Belief is wish fulfillment, gnosis is unprovable, because that's the way that I view at it, right? So the way that I approach a problem is multidisciplinary. So I start with an idea and I approach it from different aspects of my life that have taught me different things, right? So I'll look at math, I look at spirituality, I look at philosophy, I look at logic, I look at history, I look at economics, and see how that idea interplays with those fields of study and what I can gather from each of those things. And so I quickly try to prove or disprove according to each of these various fields of study. I come back to the idea, does that make it true across all of these? If so, then I move to the next part of the problem, okay? I'm not doing this rationally. I'm not sitting down for, hours or days at a time. But it becomes a process that just becomes inherent once you acquire enough knowledge for you to understand the basis, right? And that's why I put a strong emphasis on the podcast about linguistics and about lately mathematics. And I'm going to go probably deeper into that. And some of these other fields that may seem totally unrelated. But once you understand the basis of what forms the ideas in those fields, you see that you can easily start plugging and playing different variables into different problems. And you might find answers that you didn't know were possible. Okay, because if you continue to stick to the same thing, what's that famous saying by Einstein? Something about if you continue doing the same thing, expect different results. That's madness, something like that.
Yeah.
Whatever the actual quote is. Insanity, yeah. If you approach an ancient history problem about a civilization from the same point of view every single time, you're never going to get new answers. You're simply going to find new ways to prove the idea that you already had. So in order to actually move ahead in whatever you're trying to study, you have to look at other disciplines and try to find different approaches, because you might find that an approach can be plugged in as part of the solution. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whether it's an unrelated field or not, it doesn't matter.
No, I agree with that. And that's actually what I mentioned in the blog. I say, a good place to start is to learn about the scientific method in science, the history of science, the history of philosophy, learn about philosophy, get these tools in place so then you know where the blind spots are. So if you still want to look into some of these more fringe or alternative, explanations for things, you at least have knowledge of what you'll be debating against so you know. Basically what I said, is there any blind spots or did they miss something or is this wrong? Could this be wrong? And I think that there are people that can do that in a way that makes sense. And that there's authors and there's researchers and stuff. And they approach it from a place of, they actually do their homework. They really look into these things. And I was just getting frustrated because I see all these like armchair experts that just want to read one thing or read a book or watch a documentary. Now they're the expert and they've got Dunning-Kruger and they're better than ever, they know better and they're just going to go out there and, prove this person wrong or whatever. And that frustrates me because it's like from doing this podcast, I actually do research stuff and I know what's, to me at least, what's BS or what needs to be looked into more, where are things that aren't really completed and, how do we get there, that kind of thing. But I do want to point out too, we were talking about gnosis, just so people know what gnosis is. It's like firsthand knowledge through experience of some sort of mystical or spiritual experience. The origin of the word actually comes from Plato or, ancient Greece. You know, there was different variations of the word that led to the initial, the later word gnosis, and that's just that means knowledge in ancient Greek or Greek. So that's where that comes from. And I think that there's a difference between belief and even gnosis, because there's a knowledge there that can't be replicated or tangibly explained to somebody else, because you can't put your finger on it. You can't explain it in a way that makes sense. It's like a psychedelic experience in that way. It's like you had this weird experience. It was bizarre. It was spiritual. It was something next level, but you can't really put it in a box and tell the next person about it and have them understand in a way if they've never experienced anything like that. So I guess that's kind of a big leap from, you know, you discussed in your podcast, you know, belief and faith too, and having faith in things. And I don't have a problem with that. It takes the load off your shoulders. Having, you know, belief in something greater than yourself, I don't think it's a terrible thing. I think the world could probably use that right about now. With everything that's going on, but
absolutely,
and it doesn't need to, it can just be belief that, you know, we're these divine beings that have this special knowledge, and you know, we're exerting our knowledge on the universe, kind of a thing, and that we're you know, something like that. But you know, I don't know, what were you thinking with the whole belief and faith aspect of it?
You know, the problem is that a lot of things that we consider knowledge isn't knowledge. It's just a belief by consensus.
Or through our, it's like a, yeah, it's like collecting data and then applying the best.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't make it untrue in terms of your everyday life, but at its core, it's untrue. Right. So I was thinking about this earlier today on my drive. You know, driving is like the best kind of meditation. Just be careful that you don't run off the road. But, you know, I was thinking about this on the way home, and I thought of two examples. One's maybe a little more abstract, and one's a little more everyday thing. So, you know, I thought about this, for example, in terms of like the speed of light, right? So everyone assumes the speed of light is whatever, what is it, 300 million kilometers per second, right? And we base a lot of our science based on the idea that that's true. The science works, right? The GPS systems are built on this idea of speed of light being this number. The meter, for example, the unit of measure, is based on the amount of light, or the amount of distance light travels in 1 second is 1 meter, or whatever it was. I can't remember what it was exactly, but that's the new standard for a meter. So all these things make our current world true and possible to exist. But the speed of light is not 300 million miles per second. That's the two-way speed of light, right? So from one point to the next and back. And it's impossible for you to measure the one-way speed of light. The one-way speed of light could be something completely different, right? So one example that I've heard of is, you know, there's always this clock synchronizing thing, right, with relativity. So the one example that I heard was, say you send an astronaut to Mars, and you're trying to synchronize time so you can send messages back and forth to each other. We assume that it takes, you know, whatever, half the time to get to Mars, half the time to get back, right? We assume that it travels the same in all directions. But what if that's not the case? Okay, what if the two-way is the 300 million miles per second, but one way it's, say, 75% of the time, and the other way is 25% of the time? Right. In terms of our perspective, it makes no difference. Right. You can still synchronize the times exactly according to whatever the speed of light is. But you're still not at the same point in time. Right. You'd be like, whatever, 10 minutes off. Or what if it travels, you know, 300 million miles per second one way, but then it's instant travel back to you. Right. So in the example of Mars, then the clocks would be up by 20 minutes, right? Because when Mars receives the call, instead of thinking, we assume it's 10 minutes based on the distance to Mars. And so you set the clock to 10 minutes ahead, right? You send your message back, and then they know that it took 10 minutes. Okay, so now you're synchronized. But if that's not the case, if the travel back is instant, then now you're 20 minutes off, okay? Now, does that make any difference in terms of communication of the technology? Does it not make it work? No, of course not, right? Because the technology is the communication back and forth. So it still takes the 20 minutes. but you can't prove that that's actually the speed of light, right? So that's something that we take for granted that works, but is not true.
Well, okay? that comes down to what you were talking about, like language. The language is just symbols for things that, you know, they're ideas that we come up with. Yeah, we're all agreeing this is our shared reality and this is what this means, and we're all agreeing that this is the case and this is the symbol for that, and that's what this means. But really, there's no universal truth in that itself. It's something that we created. We create our own truth in that sense. And I think that's probably why the ancient Egyptians, a lot of these ancient civilizations, thought that language was magic, because technically it is. You're creating something, and it's creating, you know, a physical thing out of something like an idea. And Sherman said, well, nine seconds from the sun. So
there's nothing inherently true about a certain word that denotes the meaning of it, right?
Right.
So there's nothing about Mike that tells me if I look up the word Mike in the dictionary, I see a picture of you.
Right.
Right. There's many different mics. Okay. Same with a cat. Okay. But I have a basic idea of what a mic might look like, right? A mic's probably not a woman, right? It's probably a man. A cat is probably a little furry thing with pointy ears. Okay. Not a seal, right?
Right.
So there's nothing inherent about the word cat that tells you cat, or mic that tells you Mike. Okay. Same with, say, for example, Maurice, you have a blue shirt on, right?
Yep.
Okay. So is his shirt actually blue?
Depends on your eyes, my friend.
I mean, we create it, and like that, that's a whole other, that's could be a podcast itself. Supposedly there was a time where people couldn't see blue. If you look at the Odyssey, they describe the ocean as wine, or Homer describes the ocean as wine red, which clearly it's blue, you know, especially in Greece. It's crystal blue in most places in the Mediterranean. So yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those weird things. Like I said, it's just, we're creating this shared concept of what it is, and we can perceive that extra color of the spectrum now, or we put it together in a different way.
Well, but you know, you see the shirt as blue, but blue is actually reflecting off the shirt. So the shirt has no blue in it, right? So you need to take that into consideration when you think about how some of these linguistic ideas arise, particularly because, you know, human technology, I mean, we've had technology for thousands of years, but modern technology, high tech stuff, is very new, right? Within the last 100, 200 years.
Right.
We've developed over thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of years. And we didn't have the necessary language to explain all the things we have now. Okay. Just like our biology hasn't caught up with the lifestyle that we lead now. Right. That's why people might get anxiety from social media, because you're not used to being in a group with thousands or tens of thousands of people.
Right.
Right.
You never could hear all the terrible things about yourself from across the world before.
That's also
true. Now you can hear it all at 1 second, all in 2 seconds.
That's also true. Yeah. Especially when you have a podcast.
I 100% agree with that. Actually, I've got a little story here if you guys want to bear with me for a second. And this applies to what we're exactly talking about. In roughly 196 BC, the Egyptian priests of Memphis created the Rosetta Stone for Ptolemy V to show their support and respect. The stone contained hieroglyphs, Demotic and Greek, three different languages. Demotic's like a different form of Egyptian writing. Soon after the end of the 4th century AD, when hieroglyphs had gone out of use, the knowledge of how to write these were basically disappeared. Nobody knew how to write or read hieroglyphs. In the early years of the 19th century, scholars were able to use Greek inscriptions on the stone to help decipher the key. So let's see here. The Rosetta Stone was discovered in 1799 by one of Napoleon's officers. It was then, the French army was then defeated by the British a couple years later in 1801, and it was taken back to Britain. Thomas Young, who is an English physicist and polymath, was one of the first to show that some of the hieroglyphs presented the sounds of a royal name, which was Ptolemy. So that kind of like stalled after a little bit, you know, he came up with that and there was this like, oh, big breakthrough, you know, and then nothing really huge after that right away. And then, so there's this guy that comes along. So Jean-François Champollion, his dad owned a library when he was a child, and he became a prodigy philologist, which is an expert on languages. And he spoke many different languages. Two of them he spoke fluently, which were Arabic and Coptic. The Coptic alphabet is modified, is a modified form of the Greek alphabet, and with several different letters borrowed from the Demotic Egyptian script. So in 1822, Champollion published his first breakthrough, where he was able to decipher some of the hieroglyphs, which was never done before, showing that they had a writing system that was a combination of, it was phonetic and ideographic, meaning they used both how we use language and also picture symbols. And you see birds, and actually the way you read the hieroglyphs is, it always goes towards the bird. So if you're, you know, towards the bird's mouth. So, so many, before this was discovered, many people thought that a lot of this, the Egyptian stuff, was very esoteric or ritual based, and the Rosetta Stone, that's what was on there, and they would never be able to decipher it because it was just this like made up thing or this mystical thing. So Champollion basically deciphered the rest of it, and because the one that's the three different languages, they used the Greek to kind of decipher the rest of it. And he became like one of the first Egyptologists, basically. That wasn't even really a thing. And he deciphered the hieroglyphs, and he, you know, that's how we know what we know. Now, the whole point of what I'm trying to say is this story highlights something that was created from meaning and something special to a certain people. That was their consciousness. Then they lost it and it was forgotten to history. Then by chance, somebody with passion and the right tools comes along and again lifts the veil and reveals the true knowledge connecting basically our ancient past to, you know, our current consciousness. And one quote that I like for all this kind of stuff is from Pericles, and it says, "Time is the wisest of all counselors," which is true. The more time goes on, the more we learn. The more we learn, the more we know. And I know what you're saying about, like, we're just giving meaning to things and there's no real objective truth to these objects or these symbols or whatever. Like, it's something that we're assigning value to. But at the same time, I think this story is an example of true knowledge, because this person was able to take something that was lost to time and then recreate it through the eyes of what the people were creating, in the sense that it's a physical thing that was written down. Whether they took different meaning from those exact words and letters is a different story. Like, you know, you can interpret it the way you want to interpret it, but the actual physical language was lost to time and then rediscovered. So that, I think that's an example of true knowledge in this reality, this realm of reality, if you will.
I think our ideas of true knowledge are slightly different. I think linguistically you can't have any true knowledge, but that doesn't mean that ideology you can't. It's just a matter of translating the ideology into language is where we fail. You know, one thing that I mentioned on that episode was this idea of Gödel's incompleteness theorem, where you can have truth is bigger than provability, right? So there are there are proven things that are true, and there are true things that are unprovable. Okay, so that means that truth is larger than the things that you can prove. And I think the same rule applies when you are talking about ideas in language. There are ideas that you can experience, but you can't describe. Okay, so we've talked about this before when we've talked about like psychedelic experience, for example. You can go very in depth. You know, you can probably write a 1,000-page book on a particular psychedelic experience, but that 1,000-page book is not going to describe exactly what it felt for you to be in that experience. Okay, you might be able to approach what the experience was like, but you can never fully replicate it in that sense. Same like, you know, when you have a dream. If you have a dream and you wake up, a lot of times you forget the majority of the dream. Okay, there are some dreams where you might remember the majority of it, but you don't remember specific details, right? Whereas if you practice some kind of lucid dreaming, for example, you might be able to pick out those details as you're in the dream. But once you're back to being conscious, you forget all those ideas, okay? Because you don't have a way to replicate it with your current worldview, your current experience of living. You know, you can think about this. If you look at different species, and that's why I brought up the movie Arrival, for example, how does one little tiny change in the way that you experience reality changed the way that your language is constructed, or the way that you construct ideas or your philosophies. You know, bees can see in ultraviolet light, we can't. So were bees able to communicate verbally, how would their language be different than ours? Because we just see colors, okay? We can't see ultraviolet, okay? And the idea that I brought up in the episode is, if you have a species that's able to see all moments in time at the same time, instead of linearly, consequentially, right, one event following another, how does that change your philosophy in the way that you experience reality, in the way that you communicate it, okay? So does the experience create the language and therefore the words they use to communicate it, or is it the other way around, okay? I don't think we really have an idea for that, and there's probably no way to prove any of that either. Number one, we're the only species that we know for sure exists right now with intelligent verbal communication. I'm not saying that aliens don't exist for the audience, but...
Yeah, don't go there. They'll get you.
No, of course aliens exist. To me, it's a given. The intricacies might be something to be discussed later.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, what I was trying to say, though, is like, I think we're just slightly interpreting each other's, you know, perceptions of this a little bit different. I just think that when I say true knowledge, I'm saying something was created and written in a form with an exact language. Now, that exact language was lost to time and then recovered. And because this one dude who was a prodigy who knew Coptic, which is like a weird language to know, but he was this, you know, philologist prodigy child, was able to use the Coptic, because Coptic and Greek, you know, have some crossover and similarities. That's almost like a synchronicity in itself. So there's almost something spiritual about him discovering that and having the tools and the time, and, you know, that stone was taken from the French and brought to, what if it was never taken from the French in that treaty after the war? What if it was left to the French? Would they have, you know, and Champollion was French. So he had a lot of backlash when he was in Britain. You know what I'm saying? So it's like there's certain parts of that story that have certain gnosis aspects to it, but also have knowledge in the sense that, like I said, he was able to uncover something in this realm that was created in this realm that was somebody else's idea at the time and bring it to light. And we can interpret, we're probably most definitely interpreting it different based on our modern idea of language and concepts and ideas, but that doesn't change the fact that we know what they were saying, you know, so we can then speculate off that. It's very different than somebody thinking, oh, we'll never decipher that. And I think it means that, you know, this it's from 25,000 years ago or something. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that
that kind of goes with something that you and I have talked about before. And it's that Platonic idea that there's no new knowledge to be gathered. You're just simply kind of picking things out of the ether and remembering these different ideas, right? So, you know, I'm not saying that he wasn't a very smart and very knowledgeable guy, but he had the right tool set to be able to interpret those things, right? You know, the way that I explain that in my podcast, and my podcast is obviously a little more spiritual than yours, you guys deal more in science. And while I go into that and I have a very scientific approach to my spiritual understanding of things. You know, the way that comes off of my show is, you know, God talking to somebody, right? And whether you realize that you're not special, right, that God talks to everybody or not, and whether you have the ability to listen in to what that information is. Okay, so in your example, that translates perfectly, okay? There were many other people when this was found probably trying to study it, but they didn't have the right tool set. Okay. Because if you don't have the right tool set, you can't decipher the information.
Right.
Okay. You don't have the whole puzzle, but you have different pieces. You have different methods you can use that you can apply to find the answer. And that's what he did. So he's still picking this information out of the ether.
I mean, I get what you're saying too.
Understanding, and like, without understanding how to grab it out of nothing, he would have never found the answer. Okay. I mean, that's kind of what Gödel did, if we want to go back to that. But one thing that I found really interesting is, for example, like the number zero. Okay. What would it take until 600 AD for us to discover the number zero? Okay. It's like the most fundamental thing in mathematics today. You couldn't have 99% of the technology we have without knowing that there's a number, that zero, that forms the basis for all of mathematics.
Right.
And yet we live for thousands of years without a problem, without having that idea of nothing, of zero.
I'm right there with you. And I think that, just to be fair about this too, I think that, you know, your podcast is more about like spirituality and like these ideas of like gnosis and Gnosticism and all that. And I love that. I listen to your podcast and I love listening to like the Audible Great Courses Gnosticism and, you know, different interpretations of it and everything. But I think that when we started this podcast, and I put this in our blog, in the blog I wrote about this, we started from like the most woo, you know. I was making connections based on synchronicities of just spiritual, psychedelic, mystical experiences. And I still have those and I still love that stuff. I'm still interested in that stuff. I just think that without having this balance or like 1 foot in reality, I think you can get way far out there and kind of miss the point. Like there's a reason, even if you think that there's more to life beyond this realm, there's consciousness survives death or you go somewhere else, or we're here for a reason. And if you're just thinking about the next level and you're not thinking about this, you know, I think that that's the point. So I think that, you know, this is the Rosetta Stone. Our lives are the Rosetta Stone and we have to decipher them, in my opinion. And I don't think that you do that by just thinking about esoteric abstract thoughts that are created by somebody from 300 years ago that, you know, they just came up with them themselves, you know. And I'm not saying that there's nothing to some of these, you know, mystics or ancient knowledge. I do. I really do think there's something there. But I think that there's also a lot of people, we have it now, these modern pseudo prophets and certain, you know, esoteric, you know, communities that pretend like they have some sort of special knowledge or they're on the inside or whatever. And they don't, they don't. They're just playing telephone with a bunch of other people. And then that's how these myths get created. And that's what we're great at as human beings, is creating these myths and creating this mythology. And maybe that's just embedded into our DNA, you know, but, yeah, I don't know. I just, like I said, I love that whole aspect of things, but I need to balance it out. And I think that I'm swinging back a little bit more, you know, I'm coming back around to the other side. Once you have that basis of science and philosophy and how things work in this realm, I think you can really take a look at the other stuff and see, like I said, where are the blind spots? You know, where can we go from here that makes sense? You know, like what's possible? Reincarnation or this or that. There's our, you know, there's evidence for different things that make sense, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I just think that, you're right in one sense too. We're all human beings and we're all kind of flawed and we don't really have this real definite objectivity, because that's not what the world is. This is all just magic or a group hallucination.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're undergoing the hero's journey, man. I don't want you to get disillusioned by, we'll just say naysayers, Debbie Downers. All you naysayers. I just don't want you to be disillusioned and lose focus of what you're doing because you're getting upset at something that somebody's saying. You see what I mean?
No, I just get upset when I see people fighting and wasting time when they could be just reading a book or learning something. That's where then maybe that's their journey. I don't know. But it irritates me. It's like you could be learning something right now instead of fighting with somebody. And it's not even your idea and you don't even know what you're talking about half the time, because I see what these people are saying. It's like, I've studied that. I know what's possible or what this person said in this book or what this, and it's half the time it's wrong and they're fighting about it. So I guess that's where I get a little irritated. It's like, I want humanity to be better. I want there to be less people that are just lazy about like looking into things and stuff. I don't know. I guess that's just my own.
Yeah, but good luck with that, bro. I mean,
yeah.
But think about how much more you could learn in your journey if you spent less time worrying about other people not following theirs.
Yeah, right. No, I get it. Like I said, that was just a rant. I rarely, if you look at our Twitter feed, I rarely go on rants, but once in a while I'll rip one off. And
I know
that one was like an 8 tweeter, like I said, and I deleted it and just created a blog on it. But again, I feel like we could be further along by now instead of so I don't even know. Just like I said, like you were saying, me.
Yeah, but you can't think about.
But you're
that
saying
you can only think for yourself. You can't put yourself in other people's shoes.
You're 100% right, and both of you are right. I should just focus on what I'm doing and not worried about like what other people are doing. And I don't do this podcast for like this is our journey. I'm not like trying to impress somebody or learn this so I can do this. Or it's not like that. This is like what I'm actually. These are my thoughts. Someday I think we're living, breathing magic, and I think life's super spiritual. Then other days I think, wow, it's just is what it is kind of a thing. And I kind of swing back and forth, and it's kind of like this is my true feelings, and these are my true, this is my path. This is not like some game or a joke. You know what I'm saying? Like so.
No, but sometimes you just want to shake people and go, wake up! You know, I mean, we all get that feeling sometimes, anyone with half a brain, but yeah. The reality is it's going to take us some time for us all to evolve to the next level, and everybody isn't as awake as others.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, the only thing that you can hope to change is yourself. Regardless of how much you try to change others, they're only going to change when they're ready and willing to change. So all you can do is, you know, speak your truth, man. And if people want to listen, they'll listen. If they don't want to listen, they won't. And maybe they'll come
not,
a time.
Bro. They are not listening right now. Well, they do not like real. They do not like realism.
There might come a time when they say, oh, man, I'm looking for this. And then they find Mike and Maurice Mindscape. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way that I approach my show. You know, my show has grown a lot, but I mean, I really don't care. You know what I mean? That's why
the secret is not caring. Maybe. No, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's why I got off of Twitter on my personal account. I had two Twitter accounts. Well, I have more than that. But most of them I don't use. My personal Twitter and the podcast was the one that I was using the most. And I just got off my personal one because I just don't care about like what TV people are watching and what movies and comic books they're reading. Like, sure, that's cool. But like, does it improve my life in any way? Right. It's just like a fleeting moment of enjoyment. And then what? Right. Whereas if I focus on myself and trying to understand more and think less, then I feel like I achieve more happiness that way. Right. I mean, I was in a really tough place. Right. We've talked about this publicly and privately. I did an episode on it. I was in a really tough place at the beginning of this year and the last year. And that's not something that I thought, right? So I had this like short moment in time where I felt like a complete imposter, right? Because I'm doing this podcast about spirituality and finding truth and meaning and, you know, meditation and this, that, and the other. And meanwhile, I'm, you know, trying to fight these suicidal thoughts. I kind of left my house for about a month. I spent some times in the woods. I spent some times at my dad's house. But you know, when I got to my lowest point, where I thought I'm just kind of done with all this crap, that's when I realized, well, I'm not done with any of it, right? I'm just getting started. And so my outlook on things really changed, right? That's when I went from believing these things to be true, right? Hoping that they're true, right? That's the meaning of belief, wish fulfillment, to knowing that they're true, right? Now you have to be careful because you might find meaning in certain things that have no meaning, right? So, you know, as I mentioned, I was very close to suicide, and I had this epiphany almost at the moment that it was going to happen, and I could easily say, well, you know, it'd be like Abraham, right, trying to sacrifice his son, be like, oh, God talked to me, and God doesn't want me to die, right? My wife and I are watching Dexter now, and there's a cool scene in season 4 where that happens. I could easily have thought that, right? But like I said in my podcast, I know better, right? I know better. And it doesn't make me any more special than anybody else, right? It just takes a really deep, hard experience that just completely shatters your idea of truth and false for you to come out of it kind of as a new person, right? This idea of resurrection. Like that to me is the resurrection, right? Going through this ritual and killing this old self of yours that just kind of believes because you like what somebody said on a podcast or a video, or you like somebody's book or whatever. But that's not your path, right? I don't find as deep a purpose as you do, I think, in life. But that doesn't make me a nihilist, because I think everyone serves a purpose.
You're like a nihilist, man.
Bro. Yeah, no, I'm not a nihilist. See,
Carl Hungus over here, the nihilist.
You know, it's like when everyone calls like Buddhist nihilists. Buddhists are not nihilists; they're complete opposite of nihilists. Okay, just because you don't believe in an actual act of purpose doesn't mean that you don't serve a purpose. My thing is, I'll never know what my purpose is. Right.
Yeah.
My purpose
I think
is
you have to create your own purpose, though. That's my take on it.
To me, my purpose is to do what I do every day. Okay. Wake up and take care of my family and do my podcast and share my thoughts. And if the ideas that I come up with one day, I find the next day are wrong, then I learn from that experience and I improve the idea. Right. That's all we can do. And you can never. To go back to the spiritual ideas, to me, you can never achieve full awakening, full enlightenment, or any of these things. I think that's just kind of a fairy tale that everyone tells each other. But you can achieve that now, right? There's that quote, the kingdom of God is within you, right? It's not anywhere but where you are right now. And I think that's we get bogged down by all these ideas of things that sound super pretty and nice. Just like belief is easy. Okay, I can believe whatever the hell I want. I can believe the earth is flat. Sorry, flat earthers. I can believe. What do people believe in? Underground alien bases? Maybe, I don't know. I could believe that. I could believe that women have three nipples. Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter.
All right, Total Recall.
But any of that true? Yeah, I love
that. Well, okay, so but that was going to bring my other point about like belief is you can kind of separate it. Like I was saying earlier. Like I think there's a way in which belief serves us, which is you believe that something's possible. So like, I don't even know, Steve Jobs, when he came up with this visionary idea for this handheld thing that would have everything at your fingertips, okay, that was belief in something greater that didn't exist yet. That sounds crazy. Sounds like science fiction, but it came true through, you know, he found a way to create that using the laws of physics and science and the way we know how things work. And I think, you know, you listen to our podcast, you know that we're super critical of like, you know, materialist stuff and like science that's like dogmatic science or like scientism, stuff like that. You know, we're very, you know, against anything that's like super dogmatic one way or the other. It doesn't matter what it is, because I believe that we don't really know a ton. So even if you look at science, it's always evolving. You know, certain terms for things, ideas, you know, dates, you know, people get mad at Graham Hancock, but he's right in the sense that things keep getting older. They do keep getting older. They keep pushing back all the timelines. Clovis first shattered, you know, they found 30,000 year old stone tools in a cave in Chiquihite, Mexico that, you know, predates the idea of where people were even 15,000 years before that. So it's like things do keep getting older. Some of these, you know, fringe researchers or people that have put a lot of time into this, how could you put that much time into it and not get certain things right? You know, like I don't, if you're somewhat of a reasonable person, you know what I'm saying? So it's like things like that. But then I also think that there's this other thing about belief, which is people just believe in things and they don't look into them and they just hear an idea or they read, like I said, one book or whatever, and that's their perception of it. And maybe that works. And I know actually it does work on some level, because I remember when I was going through my spiritual awakening, I was having all these synchronicities when we first started this podcast like 4 years ago, and everything seemed to come together and I'm, you know, putting these pieces together. But in reality, all I was doing was just connecting dots that I was looking for to connect, right? Like I was finding one or two things in these long texts that would correlate to each other, and it gave it meaning to myself. And it made sense in the way that like I felt great. I'd never felt better. Right. So I there is some sort of like ignorance is bliss aspect of it, which I think that there may be something to that in a way, like maybe even some sort of evolutionary function. That's it sounds like kind of crazy, but if you look at like religion and how things have evolved since then and technology and stuff like that, this believing in something that maybe not even there might have some sort of benefit that we're just not aware of. So,
I mean, I don't think it's even that magical or special. I mean, you know, when you're looking around, right? What you see is what's directly in front of you, but you have peripheral vision, right? Now, is what's on the periphery important? If it's an object that's standing still, no. But if it's a moving object, yes, right? Because if you're, you know, in the savannas running around and you see a moving object in your periphery, it might be a lion trying to eat you, right? Now, I mean, maybe in some places in Africa, there's nothing to worry about this. You and I don't need to worry about a lion coming to eat me. There's no lions around here, okay? Now, when I go to the woods, maybe I have to worry about, you know, wolves or bears sometimes, right? Maybe. So your instincts get kind of heightened. And I think if you spend, I mean, Maurice, you guys go do your hikes in the woods all the time, right? Like when you're in the woods, yes, there's that feeling of peace because it almost feels like a place where you should be instead of just enclosed in four walls. But you also have this heightened sense of being. And I think that's part of the reason why you feel so at peace in a place like this. Now, not everybody, right? Like my wife hates going to the woods. She's very anxious, but she's very anxious in the house, right? So the anxiety is going to be there regardless.
Because when I have a lot of anxiety, but then when I go out there, my anxiety has a real purpose because I might get trampled by a moose.
Well, see, so there you go. Know? So
it's like it actually has a reason for it, yeah.
And this is the same with ideas, right? There's no difference in ideas. Just because they're not physical things doesn't make them any less real. And so there's things that you just kind of take for granted as true, right? You know, I just posted this video on the proof of 1 + 1 = 2. I mean, it's a 5-minute video. You would think you do this and there's your proof, but that's not a proof, right? It's an example, but it's not a proof. You know, there's all kinds of things you take for granted because for your everyday existence, they don't make any difference, right? You assume that you're going to go to bed and you wake up in the morning, the sun comes out. Well, is that true? No, right? An asteroid could hit the sun could supernovas, anything could happen where tomorrow the sun doesn't come up, okay? But the probability of that happening is very small, right? So you don't think about it. You just take it as true that the sun comes out tomorrow. And you do this all day long with all kinds of things. You do this even just with the words that you're using,
yeah,
right?
It's the faith that the past is, or the present's going to act the same way as the past.
Exactly. Because that's the way your brain interprets information. Okay. And the information that's extraneous, that doesn't affect your direct survival at any given moment, is kind of put on the backside. Okay. So if you're driving home, you might not remember every single tree and road sign that you're passing by, but they're there, right? You see them as you're going by, but you don't remember them. You might remember the car that's in front of you, right? He did a sudden stop and you almost crashed into him. You remember that, right? Because that's part of your survival. But you don't remember all the extraneous things. And ideas work the same way. So that's why I say belief is easy. You can believe anything you want, and it takes zero computational knowledge for you, right? It doesn't require any use of your brain for you to believe something, okay? You just assume that it's true and you move on to the next thing, okay? But knowing things, acquiring some kind of gnosis is really hard because when you begin acquiring gnosis, you realize all the things you took for granted as true, right? Your belief system is complete and utter BS, okay? See? I caught myself. I didn't use the bad word.
Yeah, we only have one left for tonight.
You're full go on that. We're explicit.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
We got that. We have that
bad,
E.
Bad letters.
Yeah, we have the E.
But you see what I mean? Like it's very hard to realize anything, whatever it might be, something that you were raised to believe to be true that is not true. Okay, and so now you have to either decide. Do I continue believing this thing that I know is not true, which happens all the time, right? I mean, you know, you grew up in church. I grew up in church. I could have easily just, you know, been a good church boy and kept going to church even when I quit believing, okay? Now that I believe 100% that it's true, do I believe that what I was raised to be true is true? No, right? So I believe for sure that God exists, but a lot of the ritual and ideas that are brought up in church, I think are complete and utter nonsense. Okay. That doesn't remove from the fact that the core idea of God being a thing and being true is true or false, right? Mm-hmm. To me, it's true. Okay. It negates some of the other things, right? Like, I don't feel like I need to go to church, right? If God's everywhere, why don't I need to go to a building, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm experiencing God right now. And my dad and I have had this argument because, you know, his thing is part of Christianity is the brotherhood, right? The communion. And that's fair. But, you know, the problem is if I try to commune some of my ideas, a lot of people won't like it, right?
Yeah,
so you're just
sure.
communing with people that believe the same thing you believe.
You're a pagan.
Right? So that's not gnosis.
Yeah. And shout out to Athena. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. So in terms of what you're saying though, I mean, look, there's certain things of what you're saying that I 100% identify with. And as you mentioned, I mean, I was raised Catholic, went to Catholic church. And then at a certain point when I got into like, I don't know, 11, 12, 13 years old, I started thinking about like the universe and aliens and possibilities and the cosmos and, metaphysics and stuff like that. And then shortly after that, you know, we start, you know, smoking cannabis and getting into psychedelics. And then I had my first psychedelic experience, and then I realized, oh, there's more to life. Like I didn't feel anything, any connection to any sort of church or religion up till that point. And then I have my first psychedelic experience. I'm like, there's more to life. I have this. This is weird. What I'm experiencing is weird. I don't know how to explain this. It's nothing like I've ever experienced before. And just opened up a whole new, you know, bunch of doors, but it didn't push me backwards. Like I didn't go back like what you're saying. I didn't think like, oh man, I got to go back there and they had the right idea. I actually started moving more forward because it's like, there's more to this. Maybe these ancient people misinterpreted this and maybe there's more to this. And that was just their way of describing something at the time, but we have more language, we have more technology, we have more knowledge up into this point that we can use. And that's the whole point, is like each generation just slowly pushes the boulder up the you know, the mountain a little bit more for the next. And we just got to keep doing that. And, you know, I do also believe that, you know, I also believe that there are periods of time which are more fruitful than others, but I don't necessarily, I don't believe that there's like a straight causal line of everything since life began, like most scientists believe. I think there are have been some ups and downs and, you know, things like that. But I also think that I don't think that there's anything in the past that's like far exceeds what we know today in terms of how we live our lives. Like it might have been different in some way that we just are unaware of, but I don't think it was like superior knowledge like some people, like flying cars and Atlantis or anything crazy like that. But yeah, I just, I don't know, man. I think life's really weird. And, like I said, this is just my journey. And when I say these things, I don't think I'm, you know, when I write that blog, I don't think I'm better than anybody, but I do know that if I've looked into all the stories, like if you let's just say you're interested in consciousness, that's what you want to research. Your consciousness is bizarre. We all have it. We all filter our entire reality through this.
Maybe,
thing. Maybe. Right. Or does it not exist? There's some people that think that. But our whole existence is filtered through this thing. So if that's the case, then you should be looking at, you know, I want to look into what do the neuroscientists have to say? What do the philosophers have to say? What do, you know, you got to look, what do the mystics have to say? I want to look at everything. And then I want to build my own model of what I think based off of that. And that's kind of what all I'm doing is that. But what I can say is, when I see people fighting, I can tell when people have actually looked into things and they haven't, and they want to like be experts. I guess that's just what bugs me, is people pretending to be experts. And I'm no expert either, but I know that I've looked into things and I know what's possible for the most part on the topics that we discuss and what's not possible. And I think that you have to, Sherman says, look at the evidence. Yeah, you have to look at the evidence. Like there is evidence, whether you know, you can turn a blind eye to it, but it's not going to go away. It's there. You know, like how was the cell phone created? There's real physics that were used in creating cell phones. You know, you might not know how a cell phone works or how the frequencies get sent up and, you know, the waves into the, you know, the air and it gets picked up by the tower. You know, you might not know how any of that works, but you don't necessarily need to based on the way we've created civilization, right? Like that's not a necessary thing for you to know, but you have to know that it's real and it's there. And I just see a lot of people like denying the existence of a lot of things like that, that I can just say, oh, well, this, read this book, you know?
I'm gonna turn around an age-old phrase.
Oh, he's coming back.
An age-old phrase. You know, I think there's only two kinds of people. There's imposters and there's people that have imposter syndrome. So that goes back to this Platonic idea of, you know thyself that you talk about all the time, or this idea in Zen or in Taoism, where, you know, the man who thinks he knows something doesn't know anything, and the man who knows it all knows nothing, right? That kind of idea. I understand the need for people to make a living, right? So I'm not knocking that. It used to bother me that you have a lot of armchair experts. And then I started doing the podcast, and I'm like, you know, at first I was like, yeah, you know, if I make some money off of this, it'd be cool. But then I got to a point where I'm like, I don't ever want to make money off of this, right? Because I don't want the direction that I take in my own personal journey to be affected at all by somebody contributing monetarily, right? Now, I do have a Patreon. There are people that contribute. I think that's great. But that's why I changed the way the Patreon works, right? I used to have content that was exclusive to that. And then I realized, well, you know, knowledge should be everywhere, should be for everybody, right? So, you know, I don't want to put my stuff behind a paywall, right? Now, I'll put episodes out earlier for the Patreon. But in terms of additional content, it's eventually going to become public, right? It might take a day, it might take a week, a month, I don't care. Again, there's nothing wrong with making money on it, right? The problem is knowing the difference between the fact that we're all trying to learn something, okay? And if you want to support it, great. Then, you know, somebody saying, well, you know, I was taught by, you know, such as Graham Hancock was my teacher, so you should listen to me. Like, that doesn't make you anybody, right? Like, I know who Graham Cook is, so does that mean I should listen to you, right? Like, to me, that doesn't make any sense.
And just a quick plug, for just $2, you can get exclusive content from Mindscape Podcast.
Well, so you see what I'm saying? Yes. Like, you guys don't pretend to know anything, right? Like, no, you're not
But I will
experts,
say this.
Right? You want to know more.
To your point, I agree with you, and I think knowledge should be free. That is, that's right. But for us, I feel like Patreon, because of the stipulations of things you're allowed to say on certain platforms or this or that, or you're not allowed to talk about this or you're allowed to talk about that or whatever the case may be, Patreon allows us, I feel like, to be a little bit more free, especially like talking about like psychedelic stuff or whatever. I don't feel like we have to like monitor, not that we really do that anyways, because a lot of the topics we talk about, there's really none of that in there, but I feel like it does allow you to like open up a little bit more, maybe give a little bit more of a piece of yourself, if that makes sense.
Well, and again, you know, your main focus for your show is different than mine, right? Whereas you guys are talking about generally scientific things, right? You do dive into the esoteric and the magical and spiritual.
Like I said, the first like 50 or 60 episodes are pretty mystical. I mean, I don't know if you
mystical
can get
Maisie, they call it.
I don't know if you can get more mystical than our first bad. But again, this has just been my evolution. This is my story. It's nobody's influenced me. This is things I'm curious in. This was a knowledge quest, and I felt like I couldn't pretend to have full knowledge without looking at all aspects of things. And I want to be able to talk with and debate everybody, so I want all of the knowledge I can get. That was always just my goal.
See, and the thing is, because I deal mostly in the spiritual, a lot of people fall prey to those kind of people, right? And I don't want anyone to ever get any idea whatsoever that my show is like those shows.
No, that's right? Great.
Right? Like, I'm not selling a meditation course. I'm not selling retreats, right? Like, I don't care about any of that stuff, right? I'm on a journey. I'm sharing it. If you want to come along, great. If you don't, there's plenty of other people out there, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I made that decision. Okay?
No, absolutely.
I'm not going to anybody for doing theirs.
Oh, dude, you were knocking us. I don't like it, bro. I don't like it. No,
look,
I'm just joking.
Would I be wearing this?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, if you need a shirt, let's plug this too. We got plenty of shirts available, ladies.
We do have some
gentlemen.
Shirts if you guys are interested. Send us an email on our.
I might just be here for the hype, man. Everybody, if you're enjoying tonight,
this guy's got a shirt cannon. He's just ripping this thing.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but look, I think we all do what we're supposed to do. Like, I think what you're doing is amazing, you know, and I know that you like what we're doing. You know, I think that's where you can kind of come together. It's like, I don't have to do the same thing as you, and I don't want other people to do the same thing as us or you or whoever. I want everybody to do some cool, different thing. and I didn't even add this in the blog, but I originally in the blog, in the rant, I was going to start talking about like creation and originality and how there's really not that much original. You know how hard it is to be truly original? And when I say truly original, I'm talking about like not influenced for the most part by something else. It's very, very hard. Unless you're meditating like crazy or, you know, psychedelics or whatever. Those are the only times where I've had these like breakthrough thoughts where I'm like, I haven't heard this anywhere. Or I haven't thought about this from somebody else talking about it or whatever. Like, that's the only time that happens for me. And I try and achieve that in day-to-day consciousness. It's really hard. Even when, since I, you know, we play music and I was a musician, it's nearly impossible to play riffs and do things that aren't influenced in some way by your favorite bands or people that came before you. It's really, really hard.
That's a good thing, though. That's what life's all about. No, like being inspired and being influenced.
Can you get there, though, is the question. Can you achieve this creativity or this reality? Can you become this creator that's just, you know, can you do that? I don't know. I think that that's an interesting conversation.
So, I mean, that kind of would lie at the core of your cosmology, right, of your theology. Because to me, yes. I think you could do whatever you want, whenever you want. You can learn any skill. You could learn Coptic and hieroglyphics and translate from Greek, right? Anybody could do this. It's just whether you want to or not, right? Hmm. You know, I talk a lot about podcasts, and, you know, it's not an original idea, this idea of, you know, we all being different perspectives of God. And you know, what you just said to me is a direct manifestation of that. Right. To your perspective is doing Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Right. Mine is doing the Alchemical Mind, plus whatever other things we have. Right. We have different experiences on a day to day basis. And so our perspectives will differ. And in unison, we create the entirety of what would be considered God. Right. This all encompassing being, you know, early on in the podcast, before I was going to go into Gnosticism, I was going to kind of do chronologically. Right. I've talked about Rumi a little bit on the show, and I had this fortunate mistake, I guess you could say, where when I dove into Rumi, I began looking at other Muslim mystics, and I found this idea that, like, when I found it, I started rolling laughing so hard because I just couldn't believe it, right? So I've used that as kind of the direction that I want to take the podcast over the next like 4 or 5 years, because I feel like while I get it, I think it's going to take me that long to fully understand it. So now I can't talk about this thing for 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. Because when if I explain it now, I'm going to lose everybody, right? Your show has different topics in every episode. My show kind of builds from one to the next.
Right.
Right. Because if I go and try to give you a proof for God on episode one, people will be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Hmm.
Right. So I got to talk about meditation and prayer and reading scripture and this, that, and the other, and different ideas and how different people see this, in order to get to a place where I can understand it, but can I get you to understand it? Right.
Hmm.
Because as mystical and magical as some of these ideas are, they're so simple, they're extremely complicated to reproduce verbally. Okay. You know, what's that, if you can't explain something to a 5-year-old, then you don't understand it yourself. Right.
Right.
I want to get to that place with all the topics that I discuss on the show where, you know, anybody can pick it up and listen. Like, I've had my oldest daughter, she's going to be 18 soon. I've had her friends listen to my podcast. And I had no idea, right? She's like, oh, yeah, such and such. I told him you were doing a podcast. He found it and said this and this and that. And, you know, these are like, you know, at the time, 16, 17-year-old kids. And you know, my audience ranges from that all the way up to, you know, 70s, right?
Right.
Most of them falling somewhere in the middle. So I have to find a way to explain it, not just across age groups, but across different cultures, right? Because most of my audience is in the U.S., but there's people all over the world listening to the podcast.
Sure.
Right? So how can I explain Christianity, not just to a Christian, but to a Hindu or a Muslim or, you know, somebody that practices Shinto, right? These are, at the core, very seemingly very different ideologies. and you have to be able to break down certain barriers to do it. And so this goes to your point. Can you learn those things? Can you come up with the perfect riff, right? That like you play it. What, isn't that a Borges novella? The guy that that discovers the symphony that when you listen to it, you die. I could be conflating it with something else.
Well,
but there is a story to that effect.
No, there's I know that there's that that story of the person seeking enlightenment with their master, and they have the moment of enlightenment, and the master strikes them on the head, and they kills them, you know, instantly. So it's like, you know, like I think where did I hear that? I think I heard that on like Duncan Trussell podcast or something like that. But it was like this thing that like, yeah, it was like had a moment of enlightenment, and then he, you know, this guy cracks him on the head and he dies, kind of a thing.
And to go back to Gödel had that idea, where through his logic deducement of things that could be true but unprovable, he had this idea that there would be an idea so fundamental to existence that if you were whispered this idea, it would be like placing a record on a record player, and when the needle hits the record player would explode.
That's crazy.
So I think those things are possible. Maybe not necessarily in that extreme a circumstance, but you know, we see this all the time. These are the awakening experiences, right? Awakening isn't a thing that happens once and you're done, right? Now you're Buddha or Jesus. It happens throughout your life. And you can easily unawaken, right? You can go back to sleep.
Right.
Okay. As long if you don't keep going into your journey.
Yeah, it's just the creative thing, just you know, people that you, because like I mentioned Steve Jobs and like the iPhone or the iPad or whatever, like even though that's a revolutionary idea, there were still cell phones that were, you know, that predated
but
it, or
weren't the same thing.
No, it wasn't the same thing. Right. Like, but what I'm saying, there is still some like precedent, just like how, you know, our favorite band Fish, like if the Grateful Dead never existed, would Fish exist? And even though they're very different sounding wise and people compare them because of the following and stuff, you know, one is still a huge influence on the other in the terms of like the improvisation aspect of it, the live performance aspect of it. There's a lot of stuff where I don't know if one would exist without the other. You could say that about a lot of bands too, but just this idea of originality just has really been fascinating me. Like, can you, that would almost be like enlightenment for me, would be achieving this state where you're having semi or completely original thoughts on a regular basis. And I think that that's when you see truly genius art or some revolution.
Yeah, but you're never going to have that. I mean, you take Tarantino. He's probably one of the best filmmakers of our time. He takes everything from past cinema.
No, I know, but mm-hmm. I'm saying like, I think that there is this, okay. So we did our Trip Report series. There was one where I did, where it was a psilocybin experience meditating in the dark. And something, a presence told me that this is the realm of imagination. This is where things come from, you know, ideas come from, you know. And mm-hmm. I've always thought about that since then, is like, I was thinking of things in that realm that I wrote down that I think are truly original thoughts. Some of them are ideas. Some of them are like invention ideas. You know, some of them are like truly things that I was, some of it to write down. And some of it was like nonsense. Like I came out of it and I'm like, oh, that's nonsense, that's nonsense, this other thing, you know. But was it nonsense? Sometimes I think that one nonsense thing, maybe that makes sense in that realm, but it doesn't make sense in this realm. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think you have to tread a thin line, right? Because you're never going to be able to prove everything to be true, right? So at some point you have to realize kind of this is enough, right? And what enough is depends on you, right? To me, I've hit enough in a lot of things that I thought I believed in and saw in life, right? And so that's put me more at peace with things. You know, to go to your music example, right? So you're talking about Fish and the Grateful Dead. Well, what if, you know, Elvis hadn't made rock popular? Well, you know, what if there weren't blues singers that influenced Elvis?
Right, there's always a causal line.
Right, what if we didn't have slavery in the U.S.? Then you wouldn't have this blues movement, right? So you can go all the way back to whatever, right? So at what point do you stop? Right.
I mean, yeah, you can keep going. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's this, there is, for some things, there is this causal line that does lead up to it. But I'm just saying, is there a way to break that causal line and achieve something that is truly visionary? Yeah. I you don't think it's possible?
And that means something visionary. Yes,
because that almost can, now we can have the conversation of free will versus determinism, because in the sense that of an objective universe, if there's a causal line for everything, that you're saying that then that takes out free will out of the realm of possibility, because everything is being influenced by everything else. Every action, every movement, everything's leading up to something else that's being created by you, but it's not really being created by you. It's just you are the one manifesting this thing that's led up to this point.
But see, that's based on an assumption. So you're assuming that time is linear.
How would you explain it in the sense that if time was not linear, like how would you explain that in a sense of free will then, I guess is what I would say. Like true free will.
The thing is, I don't believe there is true free will, right? That's the difference. Now, can you decide if you want to drink coffee or water? Possibly, right? But I mean, you can go turtles all the way down there, right? If you decide you want to drink coffee instead of water, why did you decide to drink coffee instead of water, right? So maybe you're tired. You're especially tired, right? You had a bad night of sleep. And so your body instinctually says, well, I need to pick me up. The water's not going to pick me up. The coffee will. You're not going through this consciously in your mind, right? It's one of those things where you have this basis idea of how to this methodology, and you're just plugging different variables in. Okay. Whereas, you know, if you were out cutting grass all day and you go back into your house, your first thought is not going to be, well, let me make a cup of hot coffee. Right. You're going to be like, let me get some ice water. Of course. Right. Because you're thirsty. You've been sweating. You don't want coffee. It's going to make you hotter. Okay. Now you can go through this process and think about it, but you don't, because you don't need to, right? This is part of the way that your brain works, and it makes decisions for you without you knowing that you make those decisions. Now again, you can't, it might appear to you that you're choosing water or coffee, but if you go further and further back in the causality, you might realize that's not the case. Okay. And you can plug this into almost anything.
I mean, I stand by, we've had this conversation, I think we talked about this last time, I stand by what I said before. I think it's both. I think we have free will and determinism. I think free will is the illusion that we have of ourselves and our decisions, as you're talking about just now. Do I want coffee? Do I want water? I think I'm making that decision. But I think externally or objectively, the universe, I think that if you're saying time's not linear, then everything's already been determined anyways, in my opinion. So that's just how I look at it right now. Now, that's going to probably change in the future, because my mind's changed a million times on these sorts of topics, and I get thoughts and philosophize and whatever. But currently, right now, I think internally we have free will. Externally, objectively, we have it's determinism.
So I think that it might again come to a matter of semantics, because I don't see that as well, will. I see that as agency.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that as agency, right? So. I'm going to go into this when I do this Aquinas series, because this is kind of where the proofs begin, is that you have to have an original agent that acts upon the next in order to put things into motion, right? And so in Aquinas' idea, the prime mover would be God, right? So this goes back to this idea of causality we've been talking about for the past few minutes. And to me, it applies perfectly well to will. So because you're a conscious agent, you might assume that your agency is something that you determine yourself, okay? That you consider free will, okay? But that's not the case. What you're doing is basically using the potentiality that you have, right? So these ideas, you want to make these ideas come true. So you turn that from potential energy to kinetic energy, and that moves the next object in the line, right? This whole idea of the billiard balls, right? Whereas you can
Laplace's
determine the trajectory.
Billiard shot, yep.
Perfect.
Maisie's favorite.
I have mentioned it at least 25 times on this podcast.
Yes. So one of these things. So if you go back, eventually you find this prime mover, right? Because you have conscious thought and you can analyze all this input that comes into you and express them verbally, even if you're just talking in your head to yourself, right? Not necessarily externally. you assume that you're enacting your will on something else. But in reality, there's no such thing. Everything's enacting its will upon other things. Okay, so it's just agency. All you're doing is turning that potentiality into an external kinetic movement. Okay, right. Whether it's actually pushing someone, okay, forcing them that way, or making someone do something or think about something by expressing an idea, okay, you're still, this is magic, right? It's pure magic.
Right.
Okay, you're turning this nothingness out of nowhere, and you're creating some concreteness to it, okay? And I think it's easy to conflate the two things. Now, unlike you, you're saying that, well, if there's no free will, it's all determinism. Everything's already determined, so you can't change any of it.
I'm not even necessarily saying that. I'm just saying that's what I currently believe based on where I'm at. But yeah, keep going.
Sure, but you also, you're coming from a very dualistic point of view. Whereas I don't. To me, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both at the same time, and it could be neither. Okay, but when you start to think about
when
it,
I don't think it's dualistic. I think it has to do with the fact that we have a mind, and our mind makes us an individual. I mean, I guess you could say that we don't, but I can't tell you exactly what Maurice is thinking right now. I can't tell you exactly the thoughts you're having about what you're going to say next. And if we were one thing, I would imagine that I could do that.
No, if we were one thing, you would still not be able to do that.
But I mean, in the sense that things are definitely parsed out, maybe we are what, like, okay. So if you want to talk about like Vedanta and non-duality, I'm not saying I'm all on board with that stuff to a certain extent. Like I could believe that, you know, we've done episodes on it, but do I believe that we're one thing in the sense, like, I guess what I'm saying is we could still be one thing and still be individual in our own perceptions of this one thing. Like we could all be manifestations of this one thing living out through these different branches, if that makes sense.
So we need to be careful because even in Vedanta, there's different schools of Vedanta. And even within Vedanta, not all things are one. Okay, so you can have God as a circle here and, you know, existence as a circle here, okay, where they're touching each other, or they might overlap this way.
Well, what was our buddy Chris, who studies Vedanta, we've had him on, what was he saying, Maurice, about they give words to different things because even though everything's one thing, to even conceptualize this one thing, you have to give different names for different things so people understand it, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, and that idea is why Hindus say namaste, right? I recognize the God within you. It's all the same thing.
I like this conversation. Keep going.
It's flowing, baby.
Man, this... Woo!
Good thing do you have some time left or you got to wrap it up?
Dude, for you, I have all the time in the world.
All right.
There's no time.
How long has this thing?
Yeah, there you go. There is no time.
Bring me back, because now you've got.
Okay, no, we were just talking about like free will. I'll give you this, and just tell me what you think. What if enlightenment or breaking the simulation or just escaping, you know, actually getting the best glimpse of reality, is like free will is a thing, but you don't just have it. It's something you have to develop, and it's this thing. What I was kind of talking about is a truly original thought outside of this causal line, if that even exists. And if you can achieve that, you can truly achieve free will. That's something that I've been thinking about. I don't know if that's possible, but...
In terms of a truly original thought, again, semantics, what's your originality?
Not influenced by, you know, you're either meditating or you've cleared your mind and it's this something that has nothing to do with, almost like in a dream. I have dreams where I don't even know some of these places or faces I'm seeing. Like, I've never even experienced any of these people or places. I don't even know where this came from, you know, like that kind of a thing.
So, I mean, it would be originality in terms of your human experience, right?
Right.
So, you know, you have to make some assumptions always, right? Because if you don't find that turtle at the bottom, you can't go up the ladder. So you got to make the assumptions. So there's plenty of people that have original thoughts, meaning ideas that no human has ever had. Okay, Now, those ideas might be less than we think, right? So, again, this goes back to the idea of lost technology, for example, right? Could there have been some machine that was used to build or cut stone for the pyramids? Possibly, right? I've seen some of the evidence. It looks good, but it doesn't prove anything, right? So that technology gets lost and it gets refound, right? If we don't have a historical record of that ever happening, then when the technology is refound, it's an original idea, right? Because there's no record of it ever happening, right?
Right.
So, but it's not original because we've seen it before, okay? Now, I go a step further that all ideas always exist at all points in time. And all you need is the right tools in order to pick them out of the air, okay? So that's why I emphasize learning.
And I agree with that, okay, to a certain
and
extent.
Knowing more.
You know, even our favorite guitar player, Trey Anastasio, says on one of his psychedelic, you know, trips that he was having during, you know, concert experience, he was plucking notes out of the air, improvising, you know, like that's some next level shit right there, you know?
So
yeah,
that's
it's
perfect.
It's all about getting
okay,
into
that's...
your flow state, in my opinion.
Yeah. So the psychedelics, again, is a perfect example because a lot of people figure things out on psychedelics, right? The DNA helix was figured out on a psychedelic trip.
Right, okay. Conceptualized, yeah. Or I know there's now, some debate about that. I've seen some bit, but yeah, I mean,
sure.
I know.
Fine, but that's the mythology, right?
Right.
He was tripping and he saw this helix.
Well, I think same people say the same thing about Steve Jobs and like his Eastern mysticism and LSD experiences, and that led to like what we were talking about before: the iPhone, iPad, iPod.
But see, even then, you can go either way. So, are you accessing some other level of existence in a psychedelic trip that allows you to pluck this knowledge out of thin air? Or have you gone through the process to get to a place where you're making the next logical step in solving your equation? Okay. And it doesn't have to be either or. It could be both. And that's what I'm saying. If you have the tools, you'll be able to pick those things out of thin air. But you have to have them. Okay. Now, can you have spontaneous awakening? Possibly. Okay. I would say yes. But very few and far between between that happens, right? Even the major prophets or, you know, religious figures that we have, I don't think any of them had spontaneous enlightenment, right? Buddha was in the woods for years. Jesus did his 40 days, 40 nights, right? You know, nothing about his first 30 years. You know, Muhammad, same thing. Like,
absolutely.
You see what I mean? But can you have that spontaneous experience? Yes, but you continue having the experience.
No, but that you're making my point about earlier, though, in the sense that you have to put in the you have to do something. You have to do something that takes you to that place. You can't just look at other people's comments online or, you know, read one thing and, you know, you have to put in the work. I'm not saying you can't have an opinion. Everybody's, you know, give your opinion, whatever. But to have it be valid and you know, be worthy of whatever the time, you know, like that's what it comes into is time equals worthiness. The amount of time you put into something, you know, you kind of get out, right? So it's like the old adage, the more work you put in, the more you get out. I wholly believe that that's true. If you research something for 20 years, whether it's fringe or alternative or whatever it is, you're going to know something more than the normal person about that. And you're going to even have some different outlook than somebody else. If you study science for 20 years, you're going to know more about science than most people. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the more work you put in, the more you get out. And that's true. Like I guess that's what it comes down to for me is like, just do something. Like you can have an opinion, but don't expect like people to like love your comment or love your take on it. And if you've only done it for 10 seconds, you know?
Right. So in terms of my podcast, I would phrase that as God helps those who help themselves. Okay.
All right.
And this is why I always make fun of The Secret. Let me rephrase. I don't make fun of them. I just kind of,
they're coming after
poke,
you.
Poke, poke. That's fine. They can come after me. look, I can sit in meditation for the next 60 years of my life. And all I do is focus on winning the lottery. Okay. But if I never play the lottery, I'm never going to win the lottery, right? A lottery ticket's not magically going to appear out of thin air and fall on my lap. Now, maybe some of the secret people think that's not true, right? Maybe somehow somebody bought a winning lottery ticket and they were playing with their kid and lost it, and the wind blew it into the mountains where I was meditating. Okay, and now I have the winning lottery ticket. But that's not how the actual secret works, right? You can manifest things into reality, but they don't just spontaneously appear out of nowhere, okay? Because everything has a cause coming before it. And so therefore you have to work to get to a place where that cause can reach you, okay? Now, it would be lovely if we could all just sit in the mountains and meditate, and you get whatever you want, right? You're hungry. Somebody brings you a bag of potatoes. You're poor, so somebody gives you a lottery ticket. That'd be great, but that's not the way things work, right? That's why people get taken advantage of so much, is because they don't want to put in the work.
Well,
They
it's
just want
time
the easy way
and
out.
intention, right? The people that actually make it work are putting the time and the intention into the thing, and therefore you're going to succeed on some level, right? Even if it's just being proud of yourself for getting to like another level or something, you know, it's like that aspect of it. It's like putting in, like, again, what we're talking about. But
So that's why, you get all these spiritual guys that say don't take psychedelics, right? You get this a lot in like Buddhism, for example. You hear what's the guy, Sadhguru, I guess? He talks about this too. Don't do psychedelics, right? Now there's two reasons for
it's
that,
considered what,
okay?
like a shortcut or.
So one reason it could be considered a shortcut, right? If you want to really understand the purpose of the experience and gather meaning from it, you have to fight the battle, right? You have to defeat the dragon in order to get the gold. Okay. If you're just throwing some poison in the river and the dragon drinks some and he dies, then you don't learn anything from the experience, right? You just gather the rewards. And therefore they won't mean anything, and because they don't have any inherent value, it doesn't mean anything to you. You learn nothing from it. You can't move on to the next step. The other reason, of course, is, well, I'm the guru. I have the knowledge. If you want it, you got to come hang out with me and I'll give it to you.
Right.
If you go to psychedelics, maybe you'll get something, but it won't be the same as mine. Mine's better, right? So you have that as well. And
Perfect
again,
example of that
so
is
like,
Wild Wild Country, actually, that documentary. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's a
yeah, with Osho.
a 6-part documentary on Netflix. It's probably one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, actually. There's just some, from the music to the way it's structured to the story to the, and I had never heard of it leading up to that, and now it's like and I have friends that have read some of Osho's book and be like, there's some true knowledge, you know, in those. But then you look at like how everything unfolded towards the end, and almost like he played this big Gurdjieffian joke on himself and he fell for it or something, like, you know what I'm saying? There's just something weird.
I don't think he played it, man. I'm glad he brought that up, because I was gonna say I think he just copied Gurdjieff and just spun it in a new light. You know what I mean?
Could be.
And maybe that's where he fell down, right? You hear a lot on mystical experiences when people become gurus out of a mystical experience, out of a psychedelic experience. And I mean, that's great that they gather some knowledge, but the point of the experience is not to be a guru and take people's money. The point of getting that experience is to move to the next level and bring people along with you,
Right.
right? So again, nothing wrong with making a living, but you got to tread very lightly, right? Because
Oh,
when people see they have a
100%.
little power, they take advantage of it.
No, absolutely. And look, this is my passion now. You know, it used to be playing live bands and doing music, and then 4 years ago, I'm like, yeah, that's fun. I like doing it. I still do it on the side, you know, but this knowledge quest, this is my true passion. And we're gonna do this thing, and I'm gonna go all in. And people are either going to listen and like it and, you know, maybe give us a little bit of money here and there. And look, we still are eating, you know, we're still in the red a little bit with this thing, with all the services that we use and the production value and everything. And I'm fine with that because it's my passion. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I'm not doing this for the money, you know, because we're not really making any money and yet we're still here. But I do it because I love it and I love this journey and I want to share it. And someday maybe somebody will see it and we get nice emails. Even if we didn't get anything, we were just getting nice emails. That's enough for me, to be honest with you. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, I think intentions and what you do it for and why you do it, I think is everything. And I think that you look at your podcast, mm-hmm. and I love what you're doing, and I love the takes that you have on stuff. And, you know, as you can see from the episode we just did, we don't agree on anything, but I respect mm-hmm. you as a person.
Oh, for sure.
And I know you're a smart dude, and I respect the things that you have to say. And even though we don't agree, I respect where you come from. I respect your opinions, and I like what you have to say, and it makes me think even more too. So I think that that's what we need, is that more of that out there. We need more people having these conversations, more people talking about these things. You know, spark up a conversation with your friends or your family, you know, even if it's at dinner. You know, it's not a bad thing to get into debate here and there either. You know, it's healthy. So yeah. I like this kind of stuff.
You know, people tend to avoid confrontation, and I get it, but it doesn't have to be a confrontation, right? Again, exactly what you said. We don't agree with everything that we say about each other, but I respect your opinion, and I learn from you every time I talk to you, okay? And I hope that even one word you can learn from me.
No, for sure.
But, you know, I've had, you know, I was going to do guests on the show, so I had a short stint of time where I was lining guests up, and then I decided it's not the path that I wanted to go on the podcast. But, you know, even some of the guests that I had on, and I'm sure you get this all the time because you have guests almost every episode, I mean, you don't agree with everything they say, right? But maybe you can learn something that you can apply to yourself, right? This is not a zero-sum game, right? Nobody has to win. Why can't we all win?
Well, and I, to your point, I do learn from people I disagree with, for sure. I like that saying, you learn something from everybody. I actually applied that when I was a musician. I thought, when I used to work at Guitar Center and sell guitars and, you know, do that whole thing when I was younger, in my early 20s, and you know, I learned a lot from the good players that would come in and just shred and rip. Oh man, how'd you do that? How'd you do, you know? And then I learned a lot from people that weren't necessarily as good, but they had some like unique style, and it was they didn't know music theory. They just knew how to play the guitar. And I learned a ton from those kinds of people too. So I took that along with me in life early on, which is you can learn something from everybody. Yeah, you might not learn a ton from everybody, but you can learn something. And I definitely learned from you. But I think you have a lot of work into this, so I do learn a lot from you, because you do, you know, I've read all the Gnostic stuff, I know, but every time I listen to you talk about Gnosticism, there's new little nuggets in there of stuff that I have never, you know, even heard of either. So I appreciate that. But yeah, man, that's what it's all about. And I don't know how much more time you have, but do you want to do like a 10 or 15 minute Patreon? Because I do want to ask you about the current UFO stuff and your take on it. Because
let's do that.
It's kind of interesting, but yeah, man, I really appreciate what you're doing, and we're gonna have you back on for sure. And yeah, just keep doing what you're doing and plugging away. And I know you took your breaks and you do what you got to do, but if you keep putting them out there, I'll keep listening, no doubt.
Thanks, man.
So
same to you. I mean, I still listen.
No, yeah,
even
no.
Though while I've been out, I still listen. So.
And we appreciate it. We appreciate everybody. Absolutely. That, you know, every listen that we get, I appreciate, you know, and like I said, we appreciate all our Patreon members and anybody that contributes and our close friends that we've found, you know, like Sandy and Cole and, you know, just at Paul. I mean, I can go through Sean, all these people that listen to the show regularly or chat with us on our Discord or whatever. I love everybody. Sure. You know, Sherman, he's always on there. So, I love everybody, and I love all the people that we've met, you know, and you'll get your occasional troll, but I mean, who cares? I don't really know. So
whatever, man.
But yeah, like I said, man, I really appreciate what you're doing. So everybody, if you're, you know, one of our listeners and you've never checked out Martin's podcast, I have the link down below to his website. He's got all the links on there, whatever platform you like listening to. So go check that out. And it's thealchemicalmind.com. And yeah, it's just a really awesome show if you're into like the spiritual stuff and Gnosticism and Gnosis and, you know, the conversations like we were having about free will and determinism and all that kind of stuff. So go check that out. But we're going to wrap it up here. We're going to do a Patreon segment for our Patreon members. That $2 paywall we were talking about earlier, we're cashing in, baby.
Yeah.
No, but for $2 a month, you can get access to, you know, some stuff that's not, you know, basically on all of our other platforms. So go on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast for just $2 a month. You can listen to all that stuff. You know, I don't know how much stuff's on there, but there's probably 40 episodes or 40 things that we've done with some of our guests. There's a lot. There's even a fan chat that we've done. We've been doing more fan chats, but we haven't recorded them all. So if you're interested, you can find us on Discord and jump into one of those. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, one more thing. Again, head on over to injuriesweb.org and sign up for an account. You know, if you want to chat with like-minded people on these kinds of conversations, speculate, theorize, hypothesize, perfect place to do it. Again, we are working on getting it in the app stores, so hold on tight for that. And thank you so much, dude. I really appreciate this conversation and appreciate what you're doing.
Anytime, man.
Beautiful. All right, we love everybody. Stay safe out there, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.